Welcome to The Squeal, PIC's swine management podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Pork quality. What is it? What affects it? What should you target to achieve and maintain today's definition of optimal pork quality? Well, our panel of experts shares their insights with you in this three-part series on The Squeal. Joining us are PIC's meat quality meisters Brandon Fields and Neil Matthews, and special guest, CEO of the American Meat Science Association, Colette Caster.
Brandon Fields, manager of Applied Meat Science.
Neil Matthews, Applied Meat Science.
Colette Caster, meat scientist with C-Caster Solutions.
Hey, thank you for being here today, guys. The pork quality question is one that reverberates through our industry as the customers come back and say, well, we want this. And 5 years later, they come back and say, well, we want that. And swine producers in general and all our supporting staff have always been making a superior effort at let's get the customer what they want. We may not be able to do it today, but if you give us time, we can get to that. So thank you for the work that you're doing in this important topic. Tell me about the genetics, the nutrition, the management, the shipping. How important is genetics to pork quality?
So generally we say pork quality, or the genetics of pork quality, is extremely important because it's the foundation. You have to have that base or you'll never have good pork quality. You can't start low and make it better. At the same time, I don't care how great your genetics are, we can totally screw everything up through mismanagement of the environment. In general, we estimate that roughly 20% of pork quality is genetically influenced.
Okay, now, and I hear you say environment, and I interpret that as being everything out there, not specifically in the barn environment.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
And that includes the things you mentioned, the nutrition, the transportation, the animal welfare, handling, stress component prior to slaughter, slaughter practices, chilling post-harvest prior to cutting, and technically even the cold chain management prior to consumption. And if you want to, you could throw cooking temperature in there as a component to the eating quality and the tenderness of the product.
Just to add on to what Brandon said regarding nutrition, probably the most important thing is going to be feed withdrawal. That is one of the most important things that can influence the overall end quality of the pork. Everyone's looking for a magic bullet of something to feed, special ingredients and stuff, but those things have virtually no large effect on the eating quality of pork. And if you do find something, it's not economically feasible to use it. And more likely than not, the processes that occur immediately pre and post-harvest of the pig are going to influence it much more than anything nutritionally can, with the exception of feed withdrawal.
Now, Colette, if what these guys say is correct, it sounds not necessarily simple, but it sounds like it's pretty straightforward. We know this and this and this affects it. Why is it hard to move the needle on this through these other areas, as Brandon said, the environment? Why is it difficult to get industry acceptance that, oh, okay, we need to watch for these things?
That's a great question. And it's because we're always working with very large-scale, high-speed, complex systems. So by the time you mix pigs, people, and equipment, and you do that 5 or 6 days a week on two different shifts with pigs shipping, traveling, and going through the process at all different days, times of the day, weather periods, with different people handling them, you can take what on paper sounds like a pretty straightforward process and have it become very complex with a lot of variables that need to be controlled.
So how do we educate? I mean, how do you guys identify those areas?
I think probably the most common question that we get, or is customers would come to us and say, what genetics can we switch to improve our pork quality? And our answer to them is, you've got to look at other things besides genetics. A lot of times some of them will be using some of our lines that we know can develop very good eating quality, good pH, color, so forth, if they're in the right condition, but they would be doing things like using electrical stunning and conventional chilling. Those are probably the two most limiting factors that Brandon and I come across worldwide. It's going to be how quick they can chill the product and the type of antemortem stress on the pigs, which electrical stunning gives more premortem stress than CO2 stunning would.
Yeah, and it's not specifically the stun type. We're really talking about that pre-slaughter handling capabilities and the design of the system. Old CO2 systems and all electrical systems essentially require animals to move in single file. Pigs don't like to move in single file, therefore it is a stressor and difficult to keep the line speed full for the efficiency of the plant. When you look at the newer, more modern CO2 systems, they're moving pigs in a batch, five, six, maybe even eight pigs at a time in a wide alley moved as a group. Therefore, the pigs are more easy to handle, and it's a much lower stress situation on the animal.
Colette, what do you see out there in the industry? I mean, what the PIC guys are seeing, obviously, you would see some of also, but what are the big concerns that you're recognizing?
Well, I mean, they pointed it out exactly right. So probably the biggest limitation is often chilling. So we deal in the industry with plants that were built, I don't know, you guys. Okay, well, in one case, plants that were built over 100 years ago and have been retrofitted to plants that were...
And I assume everyone knows which plant we're talking about now that we've said that 100 years ago. Yeah, I thought so. Okay, go ahead.
And then plants that were just opened this spring. And so, of course, pigs weigh much, much more than they used to. And everybody adapts and adjusts refrigeration, but it's not just about refrigeration, but spacing, capacity, depends on the time of the year, depends on the pricing of the product, the raw material demands. And so it's always a balancing act between return on investment and capital and what you're going to put money back into. So, you know, asking the question, is adequate chilling the same as ideal chilling from a port quality standpoint? So you might have adequate chilling for, you know, regulatory purposes, food safety purposes, and basic product quality, but you may need enhanced chilling to really maximize the product and the genetic potential.
Here's a tough question along the lines of your 100-year-old plant. What's the break point? What's the cutoff point? If a plant's 10 years old, do they need to have made adjustments? If it's 20 years old?
I don't know that you can put a time limit on the plant as much as it is the business plan of the company.
Okay.
As Colette said, these plants might be perfectly adequate for meeting all regulatory safety requirements of what we would call commodity pork. Yet if their business plan changes or their focus is now to not just sell commodity pork, but to sell high-quality pork, now they need to invest. And that might be, there's 20-year-old plants still putting out pretty good quality. There's 10-year-old plants that are kind of questionable.
But the other thing is not whether it's commodity versus high quality, but reducing the variation in the overall quality as
sure.
well. So they don't get the real poor quality. You know,
right.
I sort of separate poor and commodity as well. The ideal is to be good enough that you can separate that really poor quality out.
So I heard you say that maybe 20% of this pork quality is the genetic package that's delivered. Take me from that point forward and the potential for doing mischief in pork quality. They're in the pen. Where do I need to watch for problem areas that are going to impact the quality of that plate?
So, I mean, once they're at, pigs are farrowed, they're in the farm, they've gone through the nursery phase, I truly don't believe you're going to screw up pork quality in the nursery phase.
I agree.
As long as we're not talking fat quality. This is a different issue. When we're typically talking about this 20% genetic pork quality, we're talking about lean muscle quality. Color, pH, firmness, texture of the muscle. Now, the fat quality pretty much starts when the pig is born because a pig's fat.
Well, when it starts depositing fat. So when it moves from the nursery to the grow finish stage, that's where they're going to start depositing the fat.
Yeah, and that is a component of it, but slightly different. And again, very heavily environmental influence versus a genetic.
And is this then, as we talk about moving into the finishing area, that's where we are more concerned about nutritional?
With regards to the fat quality, that's where we're going to be more concerned with the nutritional component.
Yeah, and with, as Neil said previously, with regards to lean quality, we're probably not going to screw it up too bad, as long as you're feeding a very standardized diet of, you know, efficient production, right amount of, you're not shorting minerals or antioxidants or something like that. You're feeding at standard requirements. What you start looking for is, first and foremost, as you're getting closer to that market weight, things are going to impact it, or any types of injuries like bruises, scratches, that are going to be just a carcass deformity. A severe enough bruise obviously is going to impact the internal muscle structure. And really, though, to me, it gets to be right there at that last few days before market, and even, you know, almost to the day of market, when you have to go in. The feed withdrawal, as Neil mentioned, is important when you can implement it. It doesn't always work out perfectly in a commercial system, but as much as you can implement feed withdrawal without shorting the feed to the pigs that are going to be left in the barn.
So you said the last few days. I'm thinking I've got a 2-week countdown. Yes, 14 days before they go, that's when I am watching my management practices more closely because I'm impacting poor quality. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's shorter than that.
Seven days.
Three?
Okay.
2 to 3.
Two to three days. Okay, good. Well, that gives me a better sense then.
Yep.
Of what I'm doing. And during that period, I'm just making sure they're not subject to shocks.
Right. It's a welfare issue, making sure they're, you know, your feed system is there, they're eating, they're comfortable, you're not stressing. Because once you start to move that pig out of that pen, that's when you can screw up the 160, 170 days that you've already put into that animal. And that's where we focus on, especially the animal welfare, low stress, proper loading of your trucks, both on a moving the pig from the pen to the truck, using proper tools, not stressing the pig, not overcrowding the truck, especially important.
Or too low of density on there as well.
Absolutely, too low of density.
You'll get more injuries.
Tell me about, and especially Colette, because you have got auditor in your email address, tell me about this auditing process and what happens when you're on farm, and how you help them understand the importance of the last 72 hours.
I'm thinking about sort of how to relate this back to the meat quality discussion. So typically the auditing that we currently do formally in the pork industry is focused on welfare, pork safety, environment, and biosecurity. So there really isn't an industry-wide audit, if you will, for pork quality factors, but I think this is one of the things that PIC and some other groups have done to try to work collaboratively with customers to identify those issues for them and to help create best practices.
I completely concur. And that's when we kind of talk about this pork quality blueprint, or not necessarily the industry audits that PACO and different groups are involved with, but more the specific customer, individual company audits that Neil and I would do, and PIC, others in PIC, we're looking more at these quality traits. So we're not auditing the entire farm system.
A lot of times we don't even go to the farms.
Right.
Because usually, in my mind, and Colette and Brandon can disagree if they want, but I think more of the pork quality of pH, color, firmness, eating quality is developed after they arrive at the slaughter plant than before they arrive.
Okay, so the 72 hours is important, but it's just one step.
That's just one step. And to me, it's an important step, but I think in the overall scheme of things, it's a small impact in the overall quality.
Yeah, other than the significant injuries. Mm-hmm.
Or loss of pigs from stress and
right.
stuff like that, and just general welfare issues.
Right. Other than that, when you think of a stressor being a negative, mm-hmm. the further you are away from the actual point of harvest, the more time the pig would have to recover from that stressor. So as we get closer and closer to that final point, your importance of these animal handling issues and the stress components that will impact quality become more and more important. So, you know, if I stress the animal loading the truck, depending on the length of transport, it might fully recover during the ride, essentially take a nap, just like your kids do when you go on vacation. You unload it and it's a stress. Now you've got the lairage time at the plant, which again should be long enough to sufficiently allow that pig to recover.
But if it's not long enough, it's going to compound the stresses and make it even worse.
They become additive when you start not giving the pig enough time, or you've stressed it so severely it can't come back to a baseline and recover.
I like to think of it sometimes as if everything's done right at the plant, it can override some of the previous sins that have occurred with stress.
Okay.
You know, if there was a stressful loading or a short transportation, which is stressful on them as opposed to long because they can't settle down, if they have good rest time at the plant and everything before and good handling going into the stunning process, that'll sort of override those previous sins.
If I'm an observer at the for the last 24 hours of the pig before he's getting on the truck, if I'm watching that, what are things that I see that tell me we need to make some improvements here? What are problems?
Two or three that come to the forefront for me. One would be the lighting involved in the barn area where you're going to be loading the pigs so they move well.
So bright.
Well, not necessarily bright, but the right kind of lighting. If it's real bright light down where they can see it and it's in their eyes, it'll be distracting and stressful to them. Making sure your area going to where you're loading the pigs is doesn't include too many sharp turns, 90 degree turns, things like that. No obstacles in the way. Removing anything that could be a visual stimuli that would cause the pig to stop, because they're curious animals. They want to stop and look at stuff. So avoiding things like that. Making sure that your loading chute or ramp is in good condition.
That's one of the biggest
and
ones I see.
It's not too much of an incline. Brandon and I, we see some things that's, you know, quite interesting with regards to loading chutes.
Quite interesting, not necessarily good.
Yeah, you know, when you have a chainsaw involved in loading pigs, yeah, it's quite interesting.
You know, a chainsaw involved in anything usually is quite interesting,
it makes for a good time. It
We were a little bit scared for a little while, but...
in defense, that was not in the United States, but...
So the bar length was centimeters rather than inches, is what you're telling me on the chainsaw.
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah.
So once I've got them on the truck, and I've thought through this before, because it is, you've got to have down nap time on the way, the shorter the trip, the better. You don't want to extend the trip.
No.
Oh, you drive.
Typically, what we
so
see.
You drive around the parking
if it's
lot.
Less, no, you don't want to do that, obviously. Okay. But if it's 2 hours or less, generally, what we see is you need to ensure that you get plenty of rest time once they arrive at the slaughter plant.
Okay.
2 hours or less, that pig does not have enough time to settle down on the truck, get used to its surroundings before you put that other stressor on it. If you take some of the, and Colette can attest to this as well, if you haul pigs for 14 hours, almost all of them have real good meat quality. Because they've got stress, they're able to settle down, they're unloaded at the plant, get stressed a little bit more, and they basically deplete all of their glycogen, and you can't get bad quality on them.
And what I heard you say earlier is that downtime is the remedy for stressing. Not saying that they should never be stressed, just they have to have downtime.
It allows them to recover.
They need that opportunity to recover. The analogy I like to use when we're talking about transporting pigs and the stressors involved with pigs, I always try to relate the pig to a four-year-old kid. If you take a carload of four-year-olds and you load them up and you drive them to Walmart and you unload them and you run them around Walmart, are you going to have a good time? I don't think so.
Walmart, I don't think so.
Yet when you load the same load of kids up in the car and you head toward the beach, about an hour after you took off, they're all sound asleep, completely relaxed. You get there and they're pretty well rested and in a good mood. It's the same with the pigs. So you need.
And they get excited again once you get to the beach.
They get excited again once you get there, of course.
But then when they get out on the beach, they relax again.
So do you communicate that? I mean, how does the plant know, hey, I need 2 hours on these pigs after I've offloaded them?
A lot of plants track that. I mean, at the end of the day, if they're going to run out of pigs, they're going to run pigs, right? I mean, that's just a fact of life. But plants are always striving to try their best to adhere to the blueprint and to the best practices. And so a lot of them will track that and, of course, try to run them sequentially for a lot of reasons.
And I think the only places, you know, if you go across the world, there are some areas where that's not being practiced as well. And sometimes it's due to space limitations, how much space they have in their lairage to hold pigs. They know it's an issue, but they rest them as much as they can.
Unreliability of the transportation system in other countries, just the general road conditions, truck quality, those type of things.
Our thanks to Colette Caster, Neil Matthews, and Brandon Fields on this, the first of three episodes, Keen In on Meat Quality, on The Squeal. You're welcome to share these podcasts widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.